Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of BrainHackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of BrainHackers.com, and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, Brain Hackers. Dave Farrow here with another Brains Behind It. I've got another Brains Behind the Book here with an author and a speaker and a coach. Her name's Jen Kokin. And really, when we get back here, we're going to talk about how to bring humor into our everyday lives and why that's really important. Hey, Jen, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. So I did this show because I wanted to get a lot of different perspectives. And I think humor is a really, really important perspective. You do a bunch of different things. You coach people, you're a speaker. So tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're an expert in this.
Well, so I've been a coach for almost 20 years. I've coached about somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 people. There's a point where you kind of just stop counting, right?
Now, is that more like a life coach or business coach?
Life coach, but I coach people in their businesses and their personal lives because the things are intertwined. If you're bummed out at home, it's going to affect your performance at work, especially the CEO level, the entrepreneurial level, even manager level. And a lot of times I wind up coaching people who are really successful, but what I call secretly dissatisfied. Like from the outside, they should, everybody, they should be happy and they got everything going for them. I mean, I hate to bring it up, but it's kind of like the Anthony Bourdain's of the world. And
that's tragic.
Totally tragic, who seem like, wow, they should be happy. They got everything going for them. I mean, that's different because it's a mental health issue. I'm not a mental health expert.
Sure. But listen, I'll agree with you there. And I'll also be vulnerable myself and say that I've been there. I've suffered from nihilism. I think anybody with a high IQ does get nihilistic. Sometimes, you think, well, you're so smart, but what's the point? I don't mean like, oh, I'm so smart and everything, but it's more like it is the curse of humanity that we know we're going to die. You know, the dog, my dog is super happy all the time. He doesn't know he's going to die. At least that's the theory, right? And it's that ability to understand that life is finite and does have suffering that makes us, really is the cause of most of our stress.
Yeah. So, but I'll say one thing about that. We know we're going to die, but we act like we don't.
That's true. We're in denial.
Yeah, completely. Because and that's one of the reasons I wrote my book, was to inspire people to live their best life now. Because we wait until the shite. Can I say that?
You can say shit.
I can say
whatever.
Shit.
Yeah, okay, it's YouTube, man.
All right,
whatever.
Cool. We wait till the shit hits the fan, and all of a sudden it's a freaking wake up call, and we're like, oh my God, I love you, or I've been so mean, things like that. Well, cut it out. Cut it the F out.
Yeah, no. Well, actually, to get a little bit more vulgar, then I'll tell you a story then that actually fits this.
Okay.
I was a kid. I was 14 years old, and I went to a nursing home. I think this was like kind of a thing with some relatives, but it was like kind of like I was there to volunteer and talk to old folks. And I was really interested in World War II and stuff like that. So I wasn't lame. I actually wanted to be there, right?
Right.
So I started talking to people, and I did actually, there's a person, Mike Sirotic, who was part of the Scottish Regiment in World War II that was very influential on my life. And he was a great guy, and I'll talk about him later. But I talked to some of the other people there, and I had one guy pull me aside, by the arm. And he said, listen, I'm going to tell you something. Don't tell anybody, but you have to remember this, all right? Life is really short. Screw everything you can. Like, that was what he said. He was like, basically have as much sex as possible. Here's like this 80-year-old guy talking to this 14-year-old guy. But it's like, seriously, because someday you can't anymore.
Yeah, because he was married to some woman for like 50 years. And he was like, it doesn't work anymore. And I got all these ladies in the old age home. I want to stroke, but I can't.
Ah! Yeah, I must say that this was before Viagra. So yeah, maybe he was doing pretty well later on after that.
But I see a blue pill coming, sir.
But it's funny, but it's so true because, like, at least in his generation, of course, very prudish and everything, and they're very, very reserved sexually.
Right,
of course,
right.
that was one of his big regrets. And I did learn from that, but I think I learned a more valuable lesson, not just to screw everything you can, but I learned a more valuable lesson that most people, when they get older, they regret what they didn't do, not what they did.
Yes. Yep.
So talk to me about how you coach people with this philosophy.
Well, I think it's you know, I have a half day I do with people, or if they're one of my VIP clients, it's kind of included, but I have 22 questions I start off with, you know, just to put a distinction for anybody that doesn't quite understand the difference between a therapist and a coach. I don't have a medical license. I'm not, I can't prescribe medication. I don't have an MSW.
Well, you're also not trying to fix something too, right? There's not a, there's not a defect that you're not treating anxiety, depression or anything. You're trying to achieve something, I guess.
Well, yeah, I'm helping people achieve their goals. So I say it a very rudimentary way, not to offend any therapists out there. Therapists are really helping you get to the source of, well, why did I become this way? What am I still angry about with my mother, et cetera?
Yeah.
And then I work with people to fulfill their goals. But these questions still have people kind of dig down into just how their life was and how they got to be who they are today. Because I've been doing this for so long, I can at times be very intuitive with people and help them see themselves in a way they can't. Because there's a wonderful Buddhist koan that says, fish unto water, bird unto air, human being unto itself. We can't see ourselves unless somebody else, like a coach, is looking at us from the outside. And I don't tell people, I ask a ton of questions. Or I'll say to them, you know, you just brought that up like three times, either in this session or previous sessions. And the other key part there, honestly, Dave, is remembering to have a sense of freaking humor, because we take ourselves so seriously. I actually had one of my clients say, I didn't know coaching could be fun. I'm like, if you're not laughing and I'm not laughing, we shouldn't be working together, because it's got to be fun, not trivial, but at least fun, so we can poke fun at each other.
Give us an example of some of the questions.
Gosh, now I'm like brain freeze and I don't remember what they are. Something simple like, you know, tell me, where did you grow up? What part of the world, you know, do you, is there anything that you're passionate about that you've never taken action on? Do you have a dream that's unfulfilled? Things like that, because some people will, the passion, I was working with a client and her passion when she was a kid, she would just sit and like draw and write and just create. Well, guess what she does for a living? She helps people write their resumes.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I love stories like that, because I firmly believe that everybody does have a passion that they're meant to do.
But that wasn't what she was passionate about. She's bored. She was like,
yeah, but it's similar, right? Yes. So it is. So a lot of times I tell people, like, find out what you're good at and what you really enjoy, and then go out in the world and find where you can get paid really well for something like that skill. If you're creative, you might not be creating a sculpture, but you might be creating a product, you know,
exactly.
Like just that sort of thing.
And do what you love to do. Like, you should want to wake up every morning and do it, not somebody else told you to do or your parents expect of you to do. I mean, I'm Jewish. Parents have a lot of expectations of especially men and women in my culture, your doctors, your lawyers, et cetera, like, much to my parents' chagrin. Well, originally I wanted to be an actor. My mom's like, you know, that's hard. And I went, I don't like hard things. I'll go into politics.
Life is hard.
Yeah, life is hard. Exactly.
Yeah. What the hey, man?
Come what on. The hey, man? Normal man.
There you go. All right. So so you ask these questions. And then how, what would you say is like the biggest thing that's holding people back? Like, I want to get to kind of the root of something that could help the people watching. If they're stuck or if they have a goal, what's like the top thing that you could say that if they did this, it'll help get them where they want to go, in your opinion?
Stop taking things personally.
Nice.
That is really it. Like, stop, you know, it's one of Don Miguel Ruiz's four agreements. Mm-hmm. It's simple, but it's not easy to implement. Remember, life is not out to get you, and neither were your parents, your boss, your friend, fill in the blank. Stop taking things so personally. Sometimes it's people's personal perception about life's out to get them. Or they're their own worst enemy, right? So just really, we got to find the humor in that.
So how do you stop taking things personally, though? How do you do that?
Oh, man. You know, I have coaches too, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't, like, it's sort of like you have to, if you're a psychiatrist, you have somebody coaches you. If you're a dentist, I'm sure you go to conferences. But I have people outside me who remind me. And this is actually something I'm doing a live webinar on Thursday, which is like, let it go. Let go of the hard stuff. Because we've got to commit a conscious act of rebellion against our own ego.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. So I'm looking for like a brain hack. Like, when you feel this strong emotion, what do you do? That sort of thing. You know, the Stoics have exercises, meditations. Buddhists have this exercise, but you have a conscious act of rebellion. That's one of your big
against your own things. Ego, right?
Against your own ego. So tell us what that feels like and how do we do it? The nuts and bolts. Step one, step two, like
so. Give me step everything. One, you know your ego's in the way when you're upset, when that fight, flight, or freeze mechanism. Mm-hmm. The opposite of the parasympathetic nervous system, right? It's the you probably know the term for it. I don't have it off the top of my head, but it's the amygdala hijack. It's the reptilian brain that gets knocked in a place where fight, flight, or freeze. My thing is, and people always marvel at this, I just want to leave. I'm flight. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to talk to you. You're a jerk. Go away. Mm. Bye-bye. That is my first. And as soon as I know that, and secondly, as soon as I know my sense of humor's gone out the window, definitely taking something personally. So third thing is, there's a way.
So to recognize is the first thing then.
Recognize it.
The second thing.
Which mode am I in? If you're taking things personally, usually a good flag is that your sense of humor has gone out the window, but people can actually come up with their own red flag warning signs.
Yeah.
Some people may be like, go for the ice cream. Let me go out and drink a bottle of wine. There's all kinds of ways.
Oh, yeah. Whatever your vice is, you crave
it. Shopping, those kinds of things. Don't talk to anybody. Turn off the phone. Go to sleep. There's all kinds of ways that you, not you, but the proverbial, you know, the
royal you.
The royal you will kind of step away. Mm-hmm. Secondly, lose your sense of humor. Third, there's a way you can actually turn on the parasympathetic nervous system in the midst of the crap hitting the fan. What do you do?
Yeah.
Inhale, let's say 4 times, hold it for about 7 seconds, and then exhale for an 8 count. Inhale 4 count, hold it a 7 count, exhale the 8 count. The key thing is inhaling it, the exhale is twice as long.
Okay. Now, do you think that works more because you're paying attention to your breath than anything, or...
Because a lot
of different things have different breathing exercises with different counts. And I've heard, it has to be this count and this count and everything.
Right,
but
I
wonder if it's like just the fact that you're counting and you're paying attention, that's what gets your mind off of the thing, you know?
I think it's both, because I have read some interesting scientific articles that talk about the way the brain works, and it does turn on this experience of telling the brain, no, things are calm and peaceful, you're okay. But I do think you're onto something, which is, when we get into that amygdala hijack, we are not present when we're taking things personally. We're not. You could do a simple, all right, let me just stop and look at what I call a 5 senses halt. You know, you stop and you look at 5 things. All right, there's a car, there's a traffic light, there's the road, there's a sign, and there's the car dealership. All right, what are 5 sounds I'm hearing? That's exactly what you're talking about. We get present in the moment. And then the final thing would be, ask yourself the question, what am I taking personally? Like, what is so personal about this to me? Because you're giving up your power. As soon as you take it personally, you're giving away your power, and you don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. And you certainly don't want to do that around social media. Don't take something personally and then get on Twitter. You might just become president. No.
There's some people we could talk to about that.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it worked for him, but just about everybody else, it's like a disaster, right?
Totally a disaster. Yeah.
And that's really important if you want to be successful, because you're judged by your words, you're judged by your actions, and you're not yourself all the time. I find that interesting when you think about that. There are times when you are smart. There are times when you're dumb. You know, and. A lot of it does have to do with circumstances. I have a great sense of humor most of the time. I love joking around with people. It's one of the things I love most in life. You know, but I remember a couple of times where I was in a horrible mood walking through an airport because like things were going wrong. And I had like a joking t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
And somebody just read the t-shirt and chuckled. And I wanted to punch them or something, because they're like, what are you laughing at me? And I realized, oh shit, he's laughing at the thing that I put on when I had a sense of humor this morning. And now I don't have it anymore. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Absolutely.
All right. So how can we get the humor back in the workplace, for one, especially in today's, you know, politically correct times, and how do we get the humor back in our lives in general?
Yeah, well, I think it's both things. Don't take things personally. But the other thing is to remember, I've been in this inquiry about this, honestly, is what's the distinction between joking and humor? So joking is a part of being humorous, because as a comedian, I actually led a workshop last week with a group of women who were in politics. How do you bring humor back to politics? And the thing to remember, it was fun.
Yeah.
Humor connects us. Humor in and of itself can be transformative when we become vulnerable about something we did, said, or thought about in a way that other people see themselves in us. Mm. So, and you gotta be willing to tell one on yourself.
Yeah.
you know, so that someone goes, oh, wow, I can really see your point there. I was coaching this young woman who is head of this organization. They're going for these grants to help women run for office on both sides of the aisle. And I guess there's this 90-year-old, like, codger, like, really, you know, angry kind of man that she sees in the elevator all the time. And he's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you up to now? She's like, oh, we're getting grants for women to run for, are you one of those feminists? And she's like, I didn't know what to say. So we role played it. And he's right. Like, are you one of those feminists? And I said, well, yes, I am. He goes, well, I don't like women. And I said to him, do you like me? And the whole audience interrupted in laughter because you're just being vulnerable.
Yeah.
At that moment in time. And that's the key thing here. We have so many walls out.
I don't think that's the largest argument against feminism is not liking women.
No, I agree.
But that's funny though. And I think a little bit of, you can go a lot farther with a little humor than you'll ever get with even an argument or even facts, unfortunately or fortunately, right?
Yep.
You know, that's why there's so many people who, you know, I also think if your empathy comes across, you know, if you actually care about people and that's where the vulnerability comes in, I think you can get a lot farther.
Yeah, and that you have to first seek to understand before you can be understood. And most of us just want to say our piece to be understood, but stop and figure out, okay, let me let this person speak to understand where they're coming from.
Right.
Because I might not agree, but then I can kind of get a sense of, oh, that's their viewpoint. They just have a viewpoint and you have a viewpoint and your viewpoints might not be a match.
Well, and that's actually one of the most important things I think our society has lost is our ability to disagree without demonizing the other side. You know, it's absolutely amazing where even a lot of reputable news outlets I've seen on the right and the left are just making stuff up to just demonize the other side. And it used to be the novelty. And now, I guess, because of clickbait, it happens so much. It's crazy. But I digress. One of the things one of the reasons why I'm interviewing a lot of authors, because I have a lot of people who follow me and they're interested in kind of the business of being an author, speaker, coach, that sort of thing. You're very successful at it. You make a good living at this and everything. And a lot of people wonder, how the heck do you run your own business and make a good living at this sort of thing? You know, you know, as far as I know, you're not a huge like social media sensation. So you might not have kind of given your secrets away on social media yet. So use this as a platform here and let us know, like, in your opinion, also speaking as, you know, female and your background and all that, how does somebody who wants to get into this sort of business succeed at it?
Well, I think number one, understand, unless you're somebody who is a big media sensation or somebody like you who found your niche in selling your online program and you worked really hard at that, two things. Your book's never going to make you millions.
Yeah.
It simply gives you credibility to speak from a certain viewpoint or standpoint. And number two, you got to work your ass off. Mm. Nobody is an overnight sensation. The people you see that are successful have worked 2, 5, 10 years at what they're doing. And then you have to keep taking actions. And that is key because generally when any human being starts a new project, after we've figured out, okay, I'm going to be an author, I'm going to sell my book, it's going to be in this market, this is how I'm going to do it, blah, blah, blah. If we don't get immediate results, because we all want instant gratification, we give up. And that's the thing. Yeah. In the beginning, you're in a mode of concentration. 10 actions, one result. 10 actions, one result. Until
if you're lucky. If you're lucky sometimes, yeah.
Then maybe it goes to 5 and one result or 3 and one result. You got to keep the integrity in of what you're doing every day, every day. And don't do things because you have to. Do them because they make you happy. If you've got a list of things to do, write it all out. Look at that list and go, what's going to bring me joy? Today, maybe it's going to get a coffee at Starbucks. And guess what? You run into somebody who knows somebody that can, because the universe is always on our side. They're always an attention fulfilling machine.
Now, I would push back on you a little bit that I things really changed for me when I accepted that I have to do some things that I hate. Like I have to do my chores in order to play with my toys, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I say it to my son. So I had to do some things I hate. And I also, you know, when I got into business, I was thinking, hey, I don't have to work that hard. I had a lot of flexibility. I was making really good money, but I wasn't really getting ahead. I was always just kind of doing the bare minimum to get by. When I switched to the mindset that you're talking about, where you just work every waking hour, then the rewards start coming. So I would modify what you're saying a little bit though, temporally. Yeah. And I want to ask if you've seen this where, if you were to ask me, say, 10 years ago, do entrepreneurs work harder than the average person? I would say absolutely, because I regularly would work 100-hour work weeks, right?
Right.
Every waking moment. That's not an exaggeration. It's not a brag. It's just, that's just the reality. If you follow me around,
your mind's always on. Right.
And I'm always answering an email, always doing networking, always doing something and trying to fit it in. And it affects my relationship a little bit too. You know, my wife would be annoyed that I'd be, you know, writing or working on my book while we're in the living room hanging out and everything. And I was just, you know, it's always, you know, doing it because I'd get an idea and then I'd be gone for a little bit. But now it's shifting. You know, I'd say it's already shifted if I wanted to take a break. But now I'm to the point where I could live off my investments, make about $100,000 a year, never have to work a day in my life if I just quit or got injured now, you know. And certainly I'm to the point where I could take a month off and it wouldn't even damage my business, you know, and that just blows my mind, you know? So I think that you do have to work really, really hard, but it's all up front. And then when you actually do set up systems in place and or investments like properties or whatever, then you can actually just live a life of leisure and enjoy all those rewards. But it's because you worked for probably 50 cents an hour, for like 10, 20 years to get there. So you worked for nothing, you know, slaving away to get there. So you, so it's almost like you have to go through being a slave to be a king. You know, there's
gotta
be
how many years have you been in business?
Well, I've been in business for about 25 years. I'd say seriously here in the United States, it's only been about 9 years, but I kind of knew what I was doing when I was back in Canada. So I brought that knowledge, but I did have to reboot about 9 years ago, when I got here.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is right, but here's the thing, you have to work at anything to move up the corporate ladder. And I think a lot of times people today think there's some easy, quick fix. Guess what? There's not. Get over yourself.
Well, the quickest fix is getting knowledge though. If you talk to somebody, that's what really changed for me. Like 9 years ago, I rebooted, had no money. I got my reputation and I got immigration, but I spent all the money on that. And I just had to completely restart. But learning from other people, that's one thing I would do differently is get coaches, get mentors, get other people, get tons of advice from people who have actually done it, not from people who are armchair quarterbacks. You know?
Yeah, and I would push back a little bit on that. It's not just knowledge. It's not just getting knowledge. It's what do you do with it? And I think you're dead on that. This has always been my mantra as I go to other people. Well, you're doing this already. You're doing this successfully. Would you be willing to share some secrets? Could you fill me in on how? I was just on a call this morning with somebody like, how are you doing X, Y, Z? And we got into a conversation. Mm-hmm. But then it's, what do you do with that information? Are you just sitting and going, yeah, blah, blah, blah? You're like, all right, let me try some things out. Let me try out this, that, or the other thing and see what works and fits for me. Because you know, when you're first starting out, you are, there's so many models out there. There's so many different ways to do things. You look at Facebook ads, you look at what pops up on LinkedIn, do your speaker program this way, you know, do your book this way. There's a ton of people out there who have different methods, but they've all come to figure out what works for them. Yeah. And that I think is the other thing, figure out what works for you. Try a lot of stuff, but you got to figure out what works for you and where you want to go. And yes, work your ass off and then you will reap the rewards.
Well, yeah, and successful people do take action on their knowledge almost instantaneously. That's a very big trait of success. All right. Yeah. Well, speaking of which, so you're kind of, you coach people in success and you've also, you know, been successful yourself. So let's end off with, you know, give me another tip that you would share about, you know, if somebody is just starting out, I'm thinking somebody in their 20s, you know, just starting out, wants to be an entrepreneur, wants to run a startup. What's the, you know, the biggest thing they got to worry about, the biggest thing they got to try? Similar to what I asked you before, but give me something, you know, really useful.
Back in 2004, I moved from Washington, D.C. to Colorado. I knew nobody. I had no job. I knew three people, my boyfriend at the time, plus a couple like dear girlfriends, right?
That was your reboot.
That was my reboot. I knew not a soul. I had 47 meetings in the month of February and landed a job with a member of Congress. And that kind of launched my political career when I was out in Colorado. You've got to be willing to meet with people. Every time someone says you really ought to go meet with X, do it. And people are afraid to reach out to people and say, would you be willing to talk to me for 20 minutes and just share with me how you got, like, find the most successful people that you want to be like, call them. Email them and say, would you be willing to get on the phone with me for 20 minutes and just share how you got to where you are? Oh, you're not willing to meet with me? Who else do you recommend I meet with? Mm-hmm. You're talking about knowledge. Gather that knowledge. Make a commitment to do 1, 3, 5, 10 connections a day and do it every day. Have that consistent outreach to people, cold calling. to people to get them on your list, to talk about networking, speaking, whatever your product is, et cetera, because there's so much information out there. And as you do that, you begin to speak about what your dream is that you want to fulfill, you'll get better and better at saying what it is, because people will say, I don't understand. You're telling me too much. I don't get it. All right, well, let me try it this way and that way. Make that connection commitment daily. Whatever it is, 1, 3, 5, 10, do it every day.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And I'd say that that's one of the things I regret the most, is not asking more advice of others. And the problem was that you get so much advice from people who don't know what they're talking about. Every relationship you get into, your parents, every family member is going to have an opinion about your business. And you should probably ignore all of them unless they've actually run a successful business.
Yes.
So you're talking about, go to an expert who has done it and ask them.
Yeah.
And the other cool thing is, these people, their ego's involved. They're going to love to tell you. They want to brag, you know.
Yeah.
So they're going to tell you about this stuff. You're not hurting someone. You're not really even inconveniencing them. This is actually kind of a thrill to share how they did it. Everybody wants to brag about how they did something, you know, great.
Exactly. And so everybody loves talking about themselves. Not to put down anybody who's successful at all, but everyone wants to share their story, and we all love to be heard. So why not ask? And you're so right. Don't talk to the people in your family or your significant other, whoever, your husband, or even your close friends. Go to the people who have made it, the people you want to be like, you know, when you grow up.
And I would also say that everybody does love talking about themselves, but the interesting thing about our society, at least in North America, I think it might be different in other cultures, but our society is that it's taboo to talk about your success. You're bragging and you're somehow hurting other people. But it's okay to talk about your pain. You know, you can talk about all the horrible things you've experienced, and you can depress everybody around you. And don't get me wrong, I'm being a little sarcastic, but I think there is a place for that. But I don't see any validity in the philosophy that is somehow more valid than someone talking about success. I mean, that's the problem, is if people share these ideas, there would be more successful people.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because you can own your expertise. Yep. You know, when I say to people, you know, I've coached somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 people, it's not to brag. I'm owning my expertise of, no, I've actually coached that many people. So I have a pretty good ear for when people are telling me bullshit and when they're telling me the truth. I say my bullshit meter is really, really honed in. Mm-hmm. And I'm also able to hear what people aren't saying. I can hear what's in the unsaid because I've been trained to do that. So own your expertise. It's not bragging. You're just letting people know, oh, you're an expert there? I need somebody like that. Let me talk to you.
And do you think culture plays a role too? Because, like, you know, when I go to, you know, a South Asian networking event, which I've been to many, by the way, when I went to Singapore or China or different places, you go to some emerging economies, people will talk about how to make money constantly. They'll talk about success. They'll talk about how to get their kids to get better grades and things like that. And they'll talk about money with their kids all the time, you know? And when did these freaking topics become taboo in our culture? We're shooting ourselves in the foot. These kids grow up not knowing anything about money, not knowing anything about sex, not knowing anything about success and achievement. And frankly, the culture, the media, and or some parts of the education system have really crazy ideas that do get into, you know, kids' heads, because we're not talking about these very important subjects, you know?
Yeah, I think I can totally hear where you're coming from. I think it's an overgeneralization to say nobody talks about that.
Absolutely.
In North America. I bet if we broke it down, like in my family, my mom talked to me all the time about investing. Did she talk to me about sex? Absolutely not. She left around like the joy of sex and our bodies ourselves and hoped that I would read them. And I was like, Mom, you freak. You should have talked to me about it.
Well, I came from a very, very blue collar background, very poor family. Most of my extended families were everybody was under the poverty level and everything. So I think in a way it was more taboo. They didn't want, I've literally been yelled at for talking business at a family gathering. And I was like appalled that,
that
they didn't want this, but I look at them, it's like, this is part of the problem. You know, this is why they're not upwardly mobile and I'm talking about close family members. So no judgment here in general, but I've seen so many people that would really benefit from this stuff. And it's this taboo amongst a lot of like quote unquote working class people. If they don't want to talk about money and things like that, that's bad.
Well, I think it's, I mean, I grew up middle class, but my mom was a single mom. And so she, you know, I would sit at the kitchen table with her talking to me about, you know, the troubles we were having getting our electric bill paid or what have you. But that's why she wanted to make sure that I was always saving something, because she didn't ever want me to be in that position. Because what, you know, she went from her mother's house to being married. And then when my parents split up, she was a teacher making $7,000 a year, trying to keep a roof over our heads and two kids. My dad was out of work for a year and then finally got a job, and he was able to help a little bit. But I think it's interesting. I think it all depends on where you've come from as to how you approach the subject, right?
Yeah. Well, I think we could agree that you know, kids are better off if you share this.
Absolutely. Everybody is. Adults too. And I think we're all better off if we do share our success strategies, because if we focus on the negative, which is what we mostly do, how do we know to repeat what
That's how you bring it into your life.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
All right. Well, Jen, it's been fantastic having you on the show. You're definitely a brains behind it. Tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Best way is to go to my website, jencoken.com, JenCoken.com, and everything else is on there.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.